Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State writer. We're back at you with Double Coverage, talking Ole Miss and Mississippi State, another production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Logan, we're kind of, we were just talking off air that there are some big stories out there, but there's not that multitude of stories. There's not just a whole lot going on right now. Now, you know, baseball is in the stretch run, and the Laramie Tunsil story has kind of dominated things for a week, but there's not a whole lot of subplots going on out there right now.
Yeah, you're right, Paris. There's really not. And as far as Mississippi State goes, I mean, they were in final exams this past week. You know, I think most people are wrapping up probably. If they haven't wrapped up already, they're wrapping up today. So, that's why Mississippi State did not play a midweek baseball game this week. And, letting the student athletes actually do the student part for the first few days. And then Mississippi State, of course, has another Thursday, Friday, Saturday series this week. And I'm sure we'll get into more of that later.
Well, I have a Mississippi State student down there who has wrapped up her finals and is kind of waiting on the final word to come in, get the grades back. So some high expectations there. We'll see how that plays out. And yes, a Thursday to Saturday series for State. I'm all about that Thursday baseball, Logan. Ole Miss is back at it Friday this week, coming off a big series win over LSU. The Rebels did win against Arkansas Pine Bluff in the midweek, and they travel to Georgia. And the LSU series really put Ole Miss right back in the thick of the hosting conversation, and we'll get to that in a little bit as well. But let's start off with the Laramie Tunsil story. It has been the topic for the last week, and I know it seems like I've been on at least one radio show every day talking about it. As we prepare this for you folks, we will say that there is an SEC West teleconference, football coaches teleconference, that is scheduled for later this morning. So we don't know yet how Hugh Freeze will handle those questions. However he handles them, you can look for that information at djournal.com. We'll get that out there to you. But it's been kind of interesting, Logan, that Ole Miss has thrown a blanket on this and has not had a single response since about midnight of draft night, maybe a early Friday morning on the 29th of April, the draft, the first round being on the 28th, and Ole Miss came out then with the, we're investigating, we take all allegations seriously, and, you know, full cooperation with NCAA, SEC, and, you know, I think that that response is probably block saved somewhere, and somebody just has to hit like paste whenever it's time to put that response out again. But let's a little background here. Let's go all the way back to draft night, the first round, April 28th in Chicago. Laramie Tunsil slides from out of the top five down to number 13 with the Dolphins. Gets to his press conference and really, it looks like had been coached to say to own up to his behavior, take responsibility for his behavior, and just, you know, be as honest as he could be. Well, he was dealing with the hacked social media accounts right before the draft. A YouTube photo of Tunsil apparently smoking marijuana, certainly engaged with quite a bit of drug paraphernalia there. That appeared on his Twitter account, and then during the draft, the Instagram account was hacked, and there was a social media conversation, a text conversation there, in which Tunsil asked for money, apparently for rent and utilities for his mother, and he was in a conversation with Ole Miss AD for football operations, John Miller. And it looks like, you know, Miller told Tunsil to go see Barney Farrer. We're just playing out the background here, folks. I feel like I've done this like for a week now. But anyway, Miller told Tunsil to go see Barney, and the implication was that that would be taken care of. Now, that sent off alarms right away. Student athlete, a football player getting money from coaches. What Tunsil was asking for, in all likelihood, will be covered through the NCAA Student Assistance Fund, and it's my understanding that Ole Miss went immediately into action looking for that documentation, getting that documentation together to show that that exchange was part of this assistance fund that is set up to help athletes in emergency situations. And having read more and more about that fund online at ncaa.org, it's there for everybody to see, folks, the NCAA Student Assistance Fund. If you just type those words into Mr. Google, you will likely get there quickly. That fund is administered through the conferences, for starters. So documentation would include the SEC's knowledge of this exchange. So we'll see how all that plays out when it comes out. But that fund gives schools an incredible amount of leeway in dealing with student athletes and emergencies. And in fact, in the fund, it says, it starts off by saying this is intended to be, quote, broad-based. There's very little that the fund does not cover, and the fund is extended to families of student athletes. It does not speak against a recurring expense. So we'll see, but I do believe that will be Ole Miss's response regarding Laramie Tunsil's admission that he received money from Ole Miss coaches. I do believe when they finally do respond that that's what it will be. It will be rooted in the Student Assistance Fund. Now, why Ole Miss hasn't responded, Logan, is quite interesting. If it's that cut and dry and if the documentation is there, it seems like you would go ahead and put the word out instead of just kind of suffering through a public relations nightmare. And it has been that for Ole Miss. I mean, a lot of the coverage that I've seen, you know, I've seen some columns written that go strictly to the fact that Tunsil says he accepted money, and there's no mention or no knowledge in that particular column at all of the Student Assistance Fund. You know, there's a lot of misinformation and just lack of clarity out there, and you know, through it all, Ole Miss is taking a beating when it seems like they could come out and make a statement and you know, and head off some of that. But I did see that Ross Bjork responded to someone in text that said, you know, the doing things the correct way, and I'm paraphrasing here, but is more important than doing things fast and getting things out before the public. So it looks like they are quite content to not make a statement soon. And if that has changed by the time you're listening to this, with some Hugh Freeze comments on the teleconference, then certainly you can find those at djournal.com. Logan, Forbes estimated that Tunsil will sign a contract as the number 13 pick worth $12.4 million, and they say that's a loss of $8 million. The Dolphins say they believe they know who the hacker was, but person or persons has been unnamed to this point. You know, the immediate speculation centered on the stepfather, Lindsey Miller, who actually had filed a suit against Tunsil the day before the draft, going back to their differences last summer. You guys remember the story in which Tunsil took some swings, apparently, at his stepfather. Anyway, you know, it came out that there were some other impermissible benefits, rental cars, what have you, and it all led to a 7-game suspension in what turned out to be a very strong season for Ole Miss at 10-3 and, you know, Sugar Bowl championship. But, you know, a season not without drama, and it goes all the way back to the Tunsil deal from last summer. So, anyway, all that to say, Logan, that that's ground that's been covered a whole lot this week, and that's kind of where the Tunsil storyline is right now, and it's not a whole lot of change from the early hours in the day or two after the first round of the draft last Thursday. And frankly, I don't see a quick change or a resolution or information coming on this because we've kind of hit that stage now where the school's not talking, the NCAA doesn't talk, and you know, it's just going to be a T that is not crossed for a while, it looks like.
Yeah, Paris, I've been watching it from afar. It's just hard for me to believe that a light bill would be an emergency situation, you know, and that's just hard to kind of see that. I don't know that, you know, the school is going to just jump out and help some, you know, female rifle shooter, you know, on the Ole Miss rifle team. You know, it's just something that's, you know, help their parents with a light bill. It's just hard to fathom that actually happened. It may happen, but, you know, it's just kind of skeptical when you look at it, you know, with all the other stuff that, you know, Larry Metunsil has had, you know, thrown at him, allegated at him, you know, proven in the situation with the impermissible benefits with the cars and all that stuff. And, you know, like I said, it may very well be fine, but it's just hard to, when you look at everything that's kind of at him, it's just hard to believe that that's an emergency situation with a light bill that, you know, every student athlete, you know, that's under Ole Miss's, in any university, pretty much everybody in this country is going to have utility bills come in every month. And, you know, when I get a bill in the mail, you know, to pay my light bill, I don't look at that as an emergency. You know, it's obviously a necessity, but it's not an emergency situation where I've got to run down there and pay it immediately.
Well, I agree with you. It doesn't sound like an emergency, but let me just read to you from the Student Assistance Fund. It doesn't use the word emergency. That's kind of a word that I and some others have thrown in there because it is a different kind of fund. You know, it's outside the norm of a budget item or something like that. The NCAA, it uses these words, broad-based, with the administration of this fund. It is their intention to be very broad and general with it. It doesn't say emergency. And I'm reading from this fund right now. It says guidelines. And the NCAA, going back to August 2013, not only supports this fund, but contributed more than $73 million to the fund and sent that money to all of the conferences to assist with all of the student-athletes. And so I'm looking at it right now, and it says the distribution will be allocated based on the, quote, broad-based formula encompassing sports sponsorship, Pell grants, and grants and aid. You know, so I mean, they are really, you know, it's easier to look at this and see what it doesn't cover as opposed to trying to see what it does cover, because it covers a lot of things. Now, they do list some things that it does not cover here. Number one, salaries and benefits. It cannot go directly to someone's scholarship check. Okay, it's not going to do that. All right, capital improvements. While it could help to pay your mother's light bill, it can't help to add a bathroom. Okay, it can't do that. No capital improvements. Okay, athletic development opportunities. Logan, if you want to go down to the Gruden camp and become a better quarterback in the pocket, you can't use this fund for that. Okay, so I mean, it's easier to look at what is not covered, and there are some things like that are specifically stated, than to look for what is covered in here, because again, it's a broad-based fund. It would not surprise me at all for the NCAA, based on the language that I'm seeing here, to sign off on helping an athlete's parent with a light bill. That would not be surprising at all based on the language in this document that is available for everyone to see at ncaa.org.
Right, and I remember you and I think it was around SEC Media Days when the whole Lindsey Miller, you know, his stepfather, when that whole thing was going to court, and I remember you and I discussing it, you know, just what a weird situation it was to have the family move to Oxford during that time. You know, obviously my background in recruiting before I arrived at the Journal was 5 years at Rivals.com, and I talked to hundreds, probably even thousands of potential recruits, and I never heard of a student athlete saying, you know, I can't wait for me and my family to move to, you know, said city that we're going to. And that's what's, you know, yeah. And apparently that's what happened in Larry Metunsil's situation. Not only he went to Ole Miss, but his entire family just packed up and, and moved
yeah, everybody off just, to college.
That's a unique situation. I mean, obviously it's probably happened before, but it's just, I don't recall, in the hundreds of probably to thousands of kids that I talked to, that's never happened. So that's very unique.
Oh, clearly the whole family and then throw the stepfather into that too, maybe even a late addition to the family, had an eye on this day, had an eye on the day that Tunsil would be drafted and signed. And it's for years, this player has been told that he has a bright NFL future and his college career supported that. Very, very dominant player, you've seen the projections and the evaluations of him and the run up to the draft. They've obviously set their sights on this day and this day is here. And now Forbes estimates that even with the slide, he'll sign a contract worth more than $12 million. And, apparently it could have been a $20 million contract that, a million here, a million there. And pretty soon you're talking about real money.
Yeah. And $12 million, he ought to be able to pay mama's light bill for quite a while.
Ought to be able to perhaps buy the electric company, let's shift away from the Tunsil story, because we could talk about that a long time, and there's really not a whole lot of new information right now. Hey, folks, before we get into some baseball, I want to remind you about some other Daily Journal podcast that you will enjoy. Check out The Memo, our news podcast, all things Northeast Mississippi with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. That's every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And then check out Prep Rally, high school sports in Northeast Mississippi with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps every Wednesday. And we're coming to you every Thursday with double coverage. That's every Thursday, depending on what's going on and where we are. Sometimes we back that up a little bit. But we're going to be here for you eventually during the week, all things Ole Miss and Mississippi State with double coverage. Shifting gears a little bit, talking baseball. Logan, State just keeps winning SEC series. The only one they've lost is Texas A&M, and they were swept at home, and obviously not a good feeling there. But we're 7 weekends deep into what the coaches like to call the SEC baseball marathon, and State has won 7 series.
Yeah, they've won 6 of their first 7 series, and
6 series.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
All 4 of them on the road, and that's really impressive. I mean, this is a club that only won 1 SEC series last year, finished in dead last, 14th place in the SEC, didn't make Hoover. As soon as the final out was made in Knoxville to end the regular season last year, Mississippi State was done. They were in the books and heading off to wherever their summer destinations were. And this year, that's not been the case. They played very well. And early on in SEC play, it was, dominant play on the, mound. Dakota Hudson and Austin Sexton getting the jobs done on Fridays and Saturdays. Well, they've had to mix and match the last few weekends, pick up some games here and there. Dakota Hudson hadn't been that same dominant type of pitcher. But their offense is so much better than it was a year ago, and they've come up with some clutch hits, and they haven't swept anybody, and that's kind of been the biggest thing for Mississippi State. Talking point, if you can point to a negative about this Mississippi State team, that's probably it. They just haven't been able to get that sweep, and they had an opportunity this past weekend at Alabama to get that sweep. They won the Thursday night game in kind of a slugfest, and then the Friday night game was rained out, so they had to play a doubleheader on Saturday. They were going to play 2 7-inning games on Saturday, and Mississippi State had an opportunity to sweep that, to win that first game on Saturday. Austin Sexton was on the mound. He was kind of cruising right along. Alabama's offense wasn't that great coming into the series, and Mississippi State's holding a 2-1 lead. There's a runner at third with 2 outs, the bottom of the fourth inning, 2 outs, a 2-2 count on a guy that was Will Haney that was batting about .185, under the Mendoza line. And John Cohen elects to take Austin Sexton out of the game, in that situation. It's kind of a weird, Austin Sexton's their second best arm. He's got a 2-2 count on a batter that's, not hitting very well. There's a runner at third. he just needs one more strike to get out of the inning, and he elects to go to the bullpen and brings in Jacob Billingsley, and two pitches later, Will Haney doubles off the wall. I mean, the ball nearly left the yard, and, you know, Alabama ties the game up. It goes – that sends the game into extra innings, and they ended up playing a full nine-inning game. Mississippi State takes the lead in the top of the ninth. And because they pulled Austin Sexton out of the game, they're deep into their bullpen at that point. They used eight pitchers behind Austin Sexton in those four and two-thirds innings, or however long it was. They walked nine batters, including four to lead off the bottom of the ninth inning. So they walked the bases loaded. Then they walked in the winning run, or the tying run, and then they give up the only hit of the inning, which was the walk-off win for Alabama. So is a situation where that one decision way back in the fourth inning pretty much, you know, led to that chain of events that cost Mississippi State a chance to sweep. They come back and they did win the nightcap of the doubleheader on Saturday night. And, you know, Connor Pilkington has kind of become Mississippi State's third starter. And it's kind of a situation that's still up in the air. I mean, they're going TBA against Missouri this week. Again, but John Cohen did say that Connor Pilkington would probably be that third starter again this week, especially with the amount of left-handers in Missouri's lineup. But, you know, Mississippi State's got a favorable schedule down the stretch this final month. I mean, they got Missouri, then they go to Auburn next week, and then they wrap up things with Arkansas. They do have one non-conference game left at Troy. They'll go to Troy on Wednesday before the Auburn series next Friday. So, you know, Missouri, Auburn, and Arkansas all have 7-14 SEC records. You know, they're probably in the bottom tier of the SEC. So they're all series that Mississippi State should be favored in. And, you know, even though that those teams are ranked as low as they are in the SEC, every team that they play, even including Troy, they're all in the top 109 in the RPI. So even playing these games, Mississippi State should be able to help their RPI, which is sitting at number 11 right now. And, you know, most of the projections have Mississippi State hosting, and a few of them, including the one that you and I use, Parrish, D1 Baseball, has Mississippi State as a national seed right now. So Mississippi State's kind of on the fringe of that national seed conversation. Some of them have them in, some of them have them out. But if they finish strong down the stretch, I think Mississippi State will have a good chance to be a national seed.
Well, I tell you what, the schedule really is favorable for State down the stretch. When you talk about the only knock against them right now, the fact that they haven't swept anybody, Ole Miss went into the LSU series with 10 SEC wins. Six of those had come against Auburn and Arkansas, the two lowest teams in the SEC West. So they had taken advantage, and they had been swept earlier this season at home by South Carolina, a very good pitching staff. The Rebels struggled to hit that weekend. They struggled to hit against Alabama, and Tuscaloosa lost two out of three there. But they made up a lot of ground in conference play with those teams. Auburn and Arkansas had to come back to win game three, kind of a dramatic comeback the last two innings against Auburn at home, but they got it done. And they go 6-0 in those six games. Well, you know, then they get a big win against LSU last weekend. They win that series 2-1. They are right back in the thick of the hosting discussion right now. And they have Georgia this weekend on the road. They come back. They get Kentucky at home. Again, you know, quality opponents, but teams that they should be favored to beat. They should win those series, even though Georgia will throw a very good right-handed pitcher, the number 22 rated draft prospect, according to Baseball America, in Robert Tyler. You know, the back end of that Georgia staff is not that strong. They're going to throw a guy with a 5 ERA in the second game and their TBA in the third game. Ole Miss, if it hits the way it hit against LSU, should be able to win the Georgia series. If they can get two games against Georgia and then two games against Kentucky at home the following weekend, then all of a sudden you're up to 16 SEC wins. Ole Miss has hosted a regional with 16 wins before. But then, you know, if you can do that, if you can win these series, You go to Texas A&M the last weekend with really a lot on the line probably for both of those teams. I would imagine A&M will be trying to play its way into a national seed at that time. And Ole Miss, if you get there with 16 wins, you know, 17 SEC wins with the RPI that Ole Miss will have, the Rebels at number 7 in the RPI right now, you know, that would just about lock up a regional host site for Ole Miss. But, you know, they're not far off of that national seed discussion as well right now. And I thought it was interesting this morning to see that another baseball website, WarrenNolan.com, that has a lot of good information there, projects that Ole Miss, now 9 games left in the SEC regular season right now, WarrenNolan.com projects that Ole Miss will finish 18-12 in conference play, number 6 in the RPI, number 11 in strength of schedule. You know, those are good numbers, favorable numbers to talk about the possibility of a national seed. But first, you got to take things a game at a time, a pitch at a time, and the Rebels will have a strong opposing pitcher Friday night in Robert Tyler. Although Tyler has not had a dominant season, he goes into the series with a 3.34 ERA. He had a sub-3 ERA going into the Vanderbilt series last weekend. Georgia was playing in Nashville, and Tyler couldn't find the strike zone. When he did, the Commodores hit it. He gave up 4 hits, 6 walks, 7 runs, 6 of them earned in only 2 1/3 innings. And Vanderbilt went on to win that game 15-3 and went on to sweep Georgia, winning each game by at least 7 runs. So Georgia not coming off a big weekend, but will be getting back home to take on Ole Miss. The Rebels had a 12-1 win in the midweek over Arkansas Pine Bluff, and gearing up for what they hope will be a strong finish to the regular season. Folks, that's our strong finish for Double Coverage today. We thank you for being a part of the program. Want to remind you about some other very good Daily Journal podcast productions you'll want to look for. Check out The Memo, our news podcast, All Things Northeast Mississippi, with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. That's every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And check out Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs. Everything with the Northeast Mississippi Preps. That's with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps every Wednesday. Prep Rally, and Logan and I will be back with you next week for Double Coverage, all things Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Come back and join us.